that is the last time that I fly that airline, Brian.
Yeah, that fish was horrible, and I am fairly certain the pilot had no clue what he was doing.
I feel that you're right about that. Well, what movie are we going to watch today?
We are watching Baby Driver.
Is that like a movie about a baby that drives?
No. Grab your popcorn.
All right.
Welcome to Grab Your Popcorn. I'm your host, Brian Kroc. And, of course, along with me is my co-host, David Kalisa.
Hey, what's going on, everybody?
So, Baby Driver.
Baby Driver.
Baby Driver.
Baby Driver.
So, if you out there listening have no clue what Baby Driver is, you are missing out on honestly, what I mean, I'm already going to give like my rating for this film because I've literally seen it 10 times.
Literally 10 times.
Already. Literally 10 times.
That's pretty impressive for a movie that's been out just a little over a year.
Yes, I know, because it's that good. This movie is one of the best movies that has come out in recent history. It is one of the best directed, best acted, best edited films of all time.
Best car movie of all time.
One of the best car movies of all time. And I wish that cars actually had a bigger part kind of like throughout the film. But, and that's actually saying something, considering that there are just tons of car chases and stuff throughout the film. But I mean, like, these stunts that they do in there, like, put, like, any of the Fast and Furious movies to shame.
Oh, hands down, especially since Fast and Furious has become so CGI-oriented.
Yes, yes.
And has gotten away from really the main premise of why Fast and Furious was created.
Yes, but absolutely.
That is for a totally different topic.
Very different show. Focus. Whenever we review the next
25.
Fast and Furious 312, you know, just whatever it happens to be. I still keep waiting for the dude from Tokyo Drift to show back up again for real, okay? Because I'm sick and tired of him just being off there. He was my favorite dude. Sorry, but he was. That's my favorite Fast and Furious movie. All right, so we have Baby Driver. Let's get into the plot a little bit about Baby Driver.
It is a heist movie. It involves cars. It involves action. And it involves music. Those are really the main key plot
yes.
points that you need to know. And if any of those intrigue you, then you are in for a full, eventful, and awesome ride.
So Baby Driver is about a car driver named Baby.
Yes.
Everybody calls him Baby.
Yep.
No, they never actually say like his real name throughout the entire movie. They just call him Baby. And he like grew up after being in a car accident, which killed both of his parents and left him with tinnitus in his ears, which is a high pitched ringing in your ears. I know this because I suffer from this myself, actually.
I did not know that about you.
Because I've been a drummer for so long and just like, you know, destroyed my ears because I didn't wear protection, that I do have ringing in my ears that is permanent and I cannot get rid of it. So, yeah.
So now you're going to be the next Baby Driver.
No. Because okay. I suck at driving, but I can edit podcast with the best of them.
All right.
I got that. So Baby is he grows up in foster care with a guy named Joseph who is deaf. Side note: that actor is actually deaf, and so the actor had to learn a sign language to actually communicate with,
which is awesome.
With his deaf. Foster father in the movie, but he grows up, starts boosting cars, and that's when he gets like yanked into this underworld of crime, where he is forced to drive cars for this sort of crime lord in the area.
Yep, played by none other than Kevin Spacey, who delivers another superb performance.
Yes,
regardless
yes.
of what Hollywood has to say about him. He is still a very high echelon of actor.
Yes.
And he fully delivers his part in this movie as kind of sort of an antagonist. Surprise little twist at the ending with how he, helps out Baby Driver and everything like that.
Yes.
But, yeah, he's the ringleader of all the heists that are performed through the movie. He sets up the plan and takes his cut at the end of every job as kind of his finder's fee.
Yes.
And you also come to find out that every job has a different setup and a different lineup of heistmen. That's part of his ruse to not get tangled up.
Yes.
And, you know, people not to get caught. And that's how all the other main players get introduced into the film.
The Kingpin's name is Doc. And he's the mastermind of everything. But, yes, he uses these small crews to go out and commit very high scoring crimes.
Yep.
Like robbing banks and stuff like that. But the one person he always uses is Baby as the getaway person.
Yep.
And that's because he's a devil behind the wheels. They say that in the movie, which cracks me
devil,
up.
He's a devil, and you know the little subplot is you come to find out a little bit about his past, and you come to learn that he actually is indebted to Doc because one of the cars that he boosted
was Doc's,
and it had stolen merch in it, and he is paying off his debt slowly but surely with all these jobs he has to do for the majority of his young life.
Yes, yes. So in the very, very beginning of this movie, it sets up some of the best elements of this film is that one, everything starts off with a song.
Yes.
So, well, I mean, like
every scene, it doesn't matter if it's action or not.
Actually the entire movie starts off with, you hear ringing in the background, and then it slowly fades into music, as a car pulls up. And if you don't know anything about the movie, and that's kind of what I didn't really know much about the film. It's like, but it shows up, and he's there in the car. There's the group of people with him who are doing the heist, and then as the song progresses, like he is everything to the heist is timed out, kind of like to the music that he's listening to.
Yes, it is.
And he starts having a good time. He starts singing along and stuff like that. And as everything starts to get serious, it then kicks into the main part of the song, which is really fast and upbeat, which is when they actually do the car chase scenes. And so it's like, you know, a 5-minute clip of them in the beginning just doing an action scene set up to the hits of a song. And, like, just going along with this. But it's some of the best driving that I've ever seen in a movie before because everything was done with, like, actual cars. They didn't CGI anything in the film. And
they Mad Maxed it.
They Mad Maxed it. And after all of this is done, it then leads to, like, the next best scene in the movie as far as I'm concerned, which is Baby going to get coffee for the crew. And it's set up to the song Harlem Shuffle.
Yep.
And like the lyrics of the song are like spray painted or on signposts or like all this stuff throughout the entire way. Everything that he does in the song is mimicked in the world around him, to the point of like where if there's somebody dancing or something on the street, they're dancing to the rhythm of the song. When somebody is playing a saxophone in the background, they're playing along with the song. And, like, just everything about this entire scene is just pieced together so well.
I can only imagine the amount of hours and editing that it took to get every beat and scene in tune together.
It took 27 takes that they did for that scene. And they used the 21st. I know this because I read the the behind the scenes stuff.
Well, at least they didn't use the first.
That's true. It's like, but I mean, if you go back and like I've seen it numerous times, and I'm still finding stuff like that was hidden in the background or used in some way other way that was just amazing. But this one scene just goes back, and then it switches to the next scene where they're back at the their lair or whatever. And Doc is counting out the money to the rhythm of a new song.
Yep. Literally, just about 90% of every aspect of this film is synced up to a beat of a song in some way.
Yes. And then that actually leads to one of the best character setups for Baby. And that is, like, he's shown having a good time and stuff like that. But when he sits there, he's straightforward and stoic and doesn't say anything. And that's when I believe his name is Griff, played by John Bernthal. Who is also the Punisher. But he's in this scene, and he basically is trying to get information out of Baby because he doesn't know anything about him. And it is just hilarious.
He is by far one of the more new phenomenal actors that has come about
easily,
in Hollywood.
Easily, yeah.
The versatility of his acting, and along with the seriousness and depth that he takes in all of his characters that I've seen him in, is just insurmountable.
Yeah.
The movie that really cemented me as a fan of his would have to be his role in the World War II movie Fury with Brad Pitt.
He was very good.
He was just stone cold crazy, just absolutely out of his mind, but totally fit, you know, tied the group together and was just completely out there. So yes. Awesome. But he brought his craziness to this movie, and I agree, though, that scene was absolutely hilarious. With his camaraderie and everything, yeah. He's trying to talk about Baby, and everyone else is just like, leave him alone. He did fine. He drove the car. He's like, I know that. Is he retarded? Well, and then Kevin Spacey coming in like a boss.
Retarded means slow. Was he slow?
No, he wasn't slow. Then he's not retarded, is he? That cracked me up. And I'm like,
but then later on, he pulls out his earbud and he's like, are you a mute? And he goes, no.
Oh, you got jokes.
Like, and then he takes his sunglasses and puts them on, and Baby's sitting there and he's doing all this crap, and it's like very slyly, like as Griff is turned around, he pulls out another pair of sunglasses and puts them on. And then Griff slaps the sunglasses off his face, which had to have been a perfect take because it was like, I mean, an inch closer, and he just smacks the crap out of him.
Yeah.
It's like, but he knocks the glasses off of his face, and as he's walking away,
he gets another pair
of sunglasses.
That's like some slapstick comedy you'd expect to see, you know, in a movie like, you know, what we reviewed last week. That's something you'd like to see in Airplane.
Yes.
But it is so perfectly well done and integrated into the movie.
So there's a little bit more. If you actually look into the behind the scenes stuff, somebody was asking, he's like, well, why does he have so many iPods and why does he have so many sunglasses and stuff like that? He'd been boosting cars since he was 12. He just kept them.
Makes sense.
So that's how he has all of them.
Especially the pink glittery one.
Yes. So that's why he's like, he didn't go out and buy them. He just kept collecting them from every car that he stole. So I thought that was actually a really great aspect of it. Then after that, he goes home. This introduces us to Joseph, his foster father, who is an old man. He is deaf, and he is also wheelchair bound, and Baby is taking care of him as best he can. He is storing his money and stuff in the floor and like doing all that kind of stuff. But then this also sets up the other weird aspect of him as a character, in that he then takes a recording that he made while he was at like Doc's place or whatever, and then turns it into a song and then transfers it onto a cassette tape.
Yeah, he makes his own mixtapes of conversations and beats. It's just sort of his weird characteristic. And a little side note about that is the actor that plays Baby, he is a musician in real life and actually does DJing and you know, plays an assortment of instruments. So I wouldn't doubt if that was actually him fully doing that with some of his equipment, you know, in ways that you know, he had learned over time and whatnot.
Yes.
And that is a neat little character development, a little quirk about him, and those actually come and do a little bit later play.
Yep.
Without giving too much away in case you do want to see it.
Yes. So here's the basic setup after this. This is where you learn that Baby has been paying off his debt to Doc this entire time. Because it makes it look like, you know, Baby gets an equal cut just like everybody else. But then when they leave, Doc takes his money, gives him a little bit of money.
Yeah.
And then is just like, you know, it's like one more and we're square. And he's like, one more and we're done. He goes, one more and we're square.
Yep. Which is very key to listen to.
Yes.
Done and square. Not
two different things. And so he goes off. This is where he meets the love interest in the story, when he goes to a diner and he meets Deborah.
Yeah.
Meets Deborah. These two hit it off and they start having some really interesting conversations. And it's kind of a charming, quirky love story kind of thrown in here. But it makes sense for the character, you know, because he loves driving and he loves music and she just wants to get out and drive away and she loves music too. And so like they instantly have a connection and go on from there. This then leads to the next setup, which is the next heist, the final one that he's supposed to do, which is where we get introduced to Jamie Foxx's character,
Bats.
And the reason why he's called Bats is because
he's batshit crazy.
Exactly. And also, like the two other guys, one of them is Flea from the Red Hot Chili Peppers, which
he apparently didn't learn his lesson, you know, doing all the drugs and everything in Point Break. I guess his foot healed up all right.
Well, I mean, if you didn't know, though, Flea is in another car chase movie called The Chase, starring Charlie Sheen.
I did not know that.
It is a classic 90s film. And so just a little sidebar of this film. Charlie Sheen is he is being chased down by the cops after kidnapping a girl, but he kind of like was forced to kidnap her because of the situation he was in. He does it with a candy bar. He actually doesn't have a gun.
With a Butterfinger.
But, yeah, with a Butterfinger. And then they get chased down and like they've got all this stuff. But Flea makes an appearance in a monster truck along with I think one of the other guys from the Red Hot Chili Peppers, and they're trying to stop him as he's going down the highway. Like. You know, which, yeah. So there you go. Another car chase movie starring Flea. Well, not starring Flea, but he's in it. Henry Rollins is in that movie, too, in The Chase as a cop. And he's hilarious.
He's a good actor. I wish he did more.
Yes, yes. So so Baby Driver, it gets set up where he goes and does the next job. Some things go really bad.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it does not go as smoothly as the first opening.
And he's just like, you know, but he gets done with it. He's through with it. And he's like, all right, I'm done. Let's go. And he goes and he meets Deborah and they have a wonderful date and they go out and do all this stuff. And he's trying to get his life in order and go in the straight and narrow when Doc calls him up and is like, nope, you're working for me still. It's like, I didn't say you were done. I said we were square. And then this leads to the next job, which brings us back to two of the original people who were in the heist, along with the Griff, John Bernthal's character, which is Buddy and Darling, which is played by John Hamm, and Eiza Gonzalez. I actually had no idea who she was at the time, and so I was like, when I saw her, I was like, all right.
That was the first thing I'd seen her in. I feel like she added a pretty good dynamic to
the crew. She was good. She and John Hamm, like, together were very well balanced in their relationship, because it's like you can tell these are people who live life on an edge. And, I mean, like, even one of the first references they say, like, when they're talking to Doc, they're like, you know, hey, when the nose candy bag is empty, it's like, we'll darken your doorway or something along those lines. It is basically just like, yeah, we got all this money. We're going to go blow it like on fancy stuff and drugs. So it's got Buddy and Darling back again and Bats, who is the one who basically botched everything on the previous job.
Right.
Not botched, but he's the one. He was the cause of the main issue.
He is what they would call the wild card of the bunch.
Yes. And without getting into too much detail, in case you're going to go watch the movie, they go on and get into a lot more crap.
Oh, yeah.
A lot of bad things happen. And this then leads to the great, like, final battle in this movie. And I'm not gonna spoil it because it is such a great setup for this final confrontation. But just to let you know that the gunfights and everything that are involved all the way up to this point, all of them are pretty much synced to music and to hits on the beat.
Oh, and every bullet.
Like, yeah. It's insane the level of attention to detail that they put into this. Because seriously, every bullet that is fired is synced up to a rhythm.
But that is what, you know, that's what a lot of people in Hollywood are missing these days, in my opinion, is the attention to detail, or that, you know, that little drive to go the extra mile to put in those details into a movie. And that's what really sets movies like this apart from, you know, other movies in their genre.
Yes.
And you cannot replace it. You can't replicate mm-hmm. that. And that's why this movie will probably be held in such high regard for a long time to come.
Yes. So needless to say, the story continues, and we kind of have our heroes come out on the other side, and but there's a lot of bad stuff that happens in between there, and I don't. That's why I don't want to really give away like all the spoilers.
No, because
it's a great setup, and if anybody of you haven't seen it, you have to watch it just because it does not go the direction you think it'll go.
No, I absolutely agree.
It stays cool. It stays awesome. It like the acting is so amazing that it's almost scary how good it is. And but the a lot of crazy things happen, and you know we come to a nice conclusion though at the end of the film.
Absolutely, I mean it's
it doesn't end on like a depressing note where everyone dies.
Exactly,
I'm just gonna let you know that
it is extremely well rounded in every aspect of emotion that happens in the last 30 to 45 minutes of the film.
Yes,
and you know I completely agree with that. You're definitely gonna be left happy. You are definitely going to be engrossed in all the twists and turns that happen,
mm-hmm.
and you are definitely going to be entertained with every little bit of action that happens.
Yes.
in the bridge of the film.
Yes. So let's actually get into the cast and crew of the film.
Oh yes, absolutely.
As Baby, we have Ansel Elgort, who is an up and coming actor. He's been in a couple of different movies. Beforehand, he was in like the Divergent series.
Yep, and he
along with what's her name?
He made his
Shailene Woodley.
Yeah, his main notoriety, I feel, would have to come with he was the main love interest from A Fault in Our Stars.
Yes, which was the other movie he did with Shailene Woodley.
Yep, and so I mean, obviously,
so thank God Shailene Woodley wasn't in this movie. I'm kind of done with Shailene Woodley. I'm done.
I think a lot of people are. She burnt herself out, I feel. I think she needs to kind of lay low for a couple years and just come back with something absolutely crazy.
Exactly.
Maybe like she needs to like reboot Carrie. Just come back as that and just murder everybody.
Yeah.
But no, as an upcoming actor for being as young as he is, I feel he showed a good range of emotion along with a lot of good just acting skills throughout the film because, you know, he has to be really well choreographed because he has a little bit, not like full on dancing numbers, but, you know, he dances and does his own little moves to his music when he's out on his own. He does everything in sync, with the music as, to go with the rest of the film.
Yes, yes.
You know, he has to be really serious because there's a few scenes that go along with Bats where he gets really tense. He gets into that zone that you were talking about earlier, mm-hmm. when he's driving, and you really don't know how he's going to react to it because he's not behind the wheel.
Yeah, and that's kind of the thing that you also learn about the character very early on is that even though he is doing these things and he is there, like basically stealing all this stuff, that is where he draws the line. He doesn't want people to be shot. He doesn't want people to be killed or hurt in any way. He just wants to basically have everybody else go in, take the stuff, and then him drive away.
Yep,
that's what he wants. He doesn't want anybody to lose their life.
So. Anyway, yeah, so for
Bats doesn't care about that one bit.
No, he does not. He is your stereotypical serial criminal.
So Ansel Elgort is obviously being in Baby Driver and a bunch of other stuff beforehand. He is actually going to be in the new West Side Story reboot, which will be interesting.
It is interesting. I didn't know that they were rebooting that.
Says he is going to be Tony. So I don't know who that is in the movie. So I'm sure somebody out there who's just like, you don't know who Tony is? God dang it, Brian. You don't know a god dang thing about movies.
It's Tony, man. Get out of here.
It's like Tony. It's like, what do you mean it's Tony? There's like a billion Tonys here. he's going to be in the next West Side Story. He's been in a bunch of... Speaking of Carrie, he was actually in the reboot of Carrie. So there you go.
Yeah.
Back in the good old 2013. Yes, but Ansel, originally from New York, he was born in 1994 and is still a youngin. So, but I know a ton of people who saw him in The Fault in Our Stars and were just like, oh my God, this dude's amazing. So I have not seen The Fault in Our Stars. And that's because I never read the book, and I try to read the book before I go see movies, so if I can.
My wife said it was really good. She, she's a bookie like yourself. And
yeah.
She enjoyed both. I don't know off the top of my head if she
I'm not a massive John Green fan, and so that's kind of like where I he does good drama and stuff like that for the characters, But I don't know. He doesn't do it for me. I like more epic, sweeping storylines and stuff than what he produces. All right, so let's just go down the list here. We got John Bernthal, who is honestly only in the movie for like the first like 15 minutes.
Unfortunately. I was so upset.
But his last line, though.
Yeah, if you don't see me again, it's because I died.
It's like, but he says it so straight. He's just like, if you don't see me again, it's because I'm dead. And that's it. That's the last line he says. And nobody knows what happens to him after that.
He's dead.
It's like, we can only assume he's dead. But yeah, John Bernthal, who, of course, he's been around like for a good while, you know, just doing a bunch of random stuff, being in the background, you know, not really making a big splash as far as like movies or TV shows go. But I mean, he's been acting since, 2002 and just been like doing a bunch of TV shows and bunch of other stuff. And then he got his really big break in The Walking Dead.
As Shane.
And he was supposed to get killed off real quick, actually, according to the original story. But they loved him so much in that character that they elongated his storyline for a few seasons. And so that just goes to show that he had the power to actually like maintain that character way beyond when he should have died as far as the character is concerned. But from there, he then goes off. He gets cast in Fury.
Yes.
Does an amazing job in that.
Fantastic job. I mean, aside from the rest of the star power mm-hmm. that's in that movie, we'd probably down the line, we're going to have to get into that movie because that's just an excellent movie.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, as I said before, you know, a little bit earlier, he just totally engrossed in his role for that film.
And yes.
Was, you know, brought back his, you know, crazy attitude and everything like that. Just the look about him, the mm-hmm. way he talks and everything. And he just submerged himself in that character and just completely made that movie awesome.
And then this is where he gets his next big break, which is where he stars in season 2 of Daredevil as the Punisher.
And
nails the character better than anyone else ever has or possibly could.
But yeah, that's probably hands down statement. That's non-arguable. Thomas Jane was pretty good, but that's yeah. I'm a Thomas Jane fan. And
yes.
I enjoyed the storyline for that because it was gritty, you know, how the storyline of Punisher is. Whoever did the war zone.
I'm just saying, that jail scene, though.
Oh, yeah.
When he kills all those dudes.
You're just like, oh, my God.
And then he's just, like, standing there, like, just covered in blood. And, like, and the guards are just like, get down. And he's just, like, got that look on his face, like,
do you see what
this was
did?
A Tuesday.
I don't need to get down. You don't tell me what to do. Do you want to be laying down here with the rest of them?
Exactly. But, and then when the first season of The Punisher came out, like, it's such a good series. Like, it is honestly just one of the best Netflix shows that I've ever seen, next to Daredevil and some of the other ones that have come out. But yeah, I mean, he just nails that character so, so well, which is funny because then, like, I mean, he's now got like a ton of other stuff going on. But yeah, he did all of that stuff, and then he got the part in Baby Driver, and
right.
then, you know, had like all the other Punisher stuff come out. And so it's just like, oh my God. But he is definitely an up and coming star that is, somebody needs to give him like a primary lead in like a good film.
You know? Absolutely.
But I will say this as just sort of an offshoot. He did this movie in 2017 called Pilgrimage. I believe it also has Tom Holland in it, the guy who plays
Spider-Man.
But I was just nobody can really see this, but I'm gonna show it to David here. here's the cover.
Ooh.
That's John Bernthal right there. That's him
uh-huh.
with this great tattoo on his back of this cross. And Tom Holland is in it, Richard Armitage and John Bernthal, and he actually plays a mute in the movie. He never says a line.
Which he doesn't need to. He's got those crazy eyes.
Which is great because it's like a British film. It's actually an Irish film, and so he never has to do an accent of any kind.
Oh, and butcher it like Gerard Butler did.
Yes, exactly. So there is that. But yeah, he basically plays this this guy who comes back from the Crusades, and to try and redeem himself, he kind of goes and works at a monastery with all of these other dudes. And then that's when all this crap happens where these people are hunting them down. And so he's then forced to like have the internal struggle of, do I actually take up arms again? He's like, and possibly damn my soul. He's like, or do I just let all of these men of God die? And it's so good.
I'll have to keep my eye out for that one.
I mean, like, overall, the movie is like, decent. It's a decent film. But his acting in it is so amazing. It's just stupid.
I'll put that on my to-watch list.
I think it is on our – I mean, I've got the movie. I'll let you borrow it.
Good deal.
All right. So, next on our list, we got John Hamm.
Oh, man.
St. Louis born. St. Louis raised. John Hamm. Favorite son of St. Louis. I'm not joking. He literally, like, he can go anywhere in St. Louis right now, and he will eat and drink for free. It does not matter. He is the favorite son of St. Louis at this point.
I mean, he's done a pretty good job, but I feel like when John Goodman goes, yeah, that's who the torch is going to be passed on to.
Yes, yes. So, John Hamm, everybody should know who John Hamm is at this point because he's freaking John Hamm. He was Don Draper in Mad Men, which is an amazing show, and that was his big break.
Yeah,
that was the thing that launched him into his current career. But he's gone on to just do a ton of other stuff.
He had a really good part. I liked him as his agent role in the movie The Town, which had Ben Affleck and Jeremy Renner.
He did that other one where it was a comedy.
Tag.
He did Tag.
That's one of the
he
more,
did Tag, which is
more
a more
recent
one. I am looking.
Ironically, also with Jeremy Renner.
Yes.
I wonder if they work well together.
Yeah, they do. They do very, very well together. I'm looking at his filmography right now. There's so many things. Like, he's done random like TV bits.
And he's got a lot of uncredited stuff.
He was hilarious on Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt. Abso-frickin-lutely hilarious.
Haven't got around to that one yet.
Watch it just for him. His
right.
character's name is Richard Wayne Gary Wayne.
Okay.
And he usually goes around with like these giant glasses on and like a ponytail, and he just spouts off like some of the most insane things ever. If you don't know the basic plot of Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt is that this guy kidnaps all of these women and forces them to live in a bunker as his wives.
Oh, wow.
And then they finally get out, and it's like they've lost like 15 years of their life, though. And so Kimmy goes in as a teenager and then comes out later on, and she like has no idea about the world around her. But she's just like, I'm going to go out there. I'm going to do everything, though. It's like, because I can. it's a great show, and he's really, really good in it. I'm looking at some of the other stuff that he's done. He does really well in some of the comedy bits that, like I said there. What else is, let's see. Oh yeah. He was on Parks and Rec for a couple of episodes too, before he really made it big in Mad Men. But, I'm trying to think if there's another movie that he did that was really good, and I'm just not seeing it right here. Well, whatever. Sorry, John. I forgot the name of your movie. Wait.
Oh,
wait.
Did we get it?
No.
No?
No, but I did just see something that I thought was amazing.
And what is that?
He's going to be in Top Gun Maverick.
Oh, okay. That's it. Totally seeing it.
It's like
opening night.
It's all done. It's yep. That's just how it's going to be.
Especially if he ends up being like the main antagonist going up against Maverick. That
yes.
would be an epic showdown.
Oh, the movie I was talking about before was Keeping Up with the Joneses.
Oh, with Zach Galifianakis?
Yes.
Is he in it? Okay,
yes,
yeah.
And John Hamm and Gal Gadot, however you say her name.
Gal Gadot.
And then that other redheaded lady that I never remember her name either. So, God dang. I told you, I'm bad with names. If I don't have it in front of me, I'm gonna forget it, except for John Hamm. I mean, because he's John Hamm. I want to meet John Hamm one of these days.
You just like saying his full name.
That's the
umpteenth time you said John Hamm. John
Hamm. The SNL skit, which is like John Hamm's Ham Emporium. Like, and it's just all these different things that are just plays on his name. Yeah. So there you go. Go see everything John Hamm is in. Let's see here. We got
next on the John Hamm episode.
Eiza Gonzalez. I think that's how you pronounce her name. It's Eiza Gonzalez. And she has actually not been in a massive amount of stuff. She was in the Dusk Till Dawn series. She was on the True Love. She'd done a bunch of Spanish-speaking things. She was apparently in Gem and the Holograms, although I didn't see that one. And then she was a Baby Driver as Darling. Yeah. But I will tell you this. Up at the very, very top of her her actress credits, which is in pre-production right now, Kung Fury 2.
Yes, I am so excited. My wife thinks that is the most stupid thing ever created, and she is so wrong.
Kung Fury is one of those, I think.
It was a Netflix. It's a Netflix original.
Yeah.
And the basic premise, it cannot be described. All I can tell you is you watch the first 13 seconds. And I'm being very specific with that. You watch the first 13 seconds of that film, and if you are not intrigued or entertained, then your sense of humor is dull as a spoon, and you are just very uncultured because it is awesome.
I still like the setup for the character in Kung Fury. like, I was bit by a cobra and then struck by lightning. Like, okay. It is one of the craziest setups for a movie, but that's the way it's supposed to be.
Oh, it is completely meant to just defy everything and not make any sense.
Yes.
And
speaking of other goofy parody movies, though, I did also see the fact that apparently the guy who created Kung Pao Enter the Fist or whatever it is, which is another one of those great comedic movies where they spliced in from another kung fu movie.
Okay.
Like that one is, they're making a sequel to that one as well.
Oh dear God.
So yes, that's going to be fan freaking tastic.
Good deal.
Let's see. So yeah, she hasn't been in much, but she's going to be in Kung Fury 2. So there you go.
Definitely keep your eye out for that one.
Next one we got is Lily James. Lily James plays a Deborah. And I did not know this, but she is an English actress, which means that she did all of the movie in an American accent, and I couldn't tell, which means she did a good job.
It's funny how actors and actresses from other countries can pull off an American accent very well, but then when we try to pull off accents for other countries, it's horrible.
Yeah, and then you get other people like Scottish actors who can't do an Irish accent. So, you know, like, I mean, it is what it is. It's what it is, okay? I can usually spot the difference, though, between a lot of different accents. You know, like I can tell the difference between New Zealand and Australia, and even actually different parts of Australia, because different parts of Australia speak differently.
I tell you what, she's got a pretty good filmography under her belt.
Yes, she does, including the Cinderella, Pride and Prejudice, and Zombies, Baby Driver. She had a part in Mamma Mia. Here we go again.
Sorry to Bother You, which I heard did really well in theaters.
War and Peace, Downton Abbey. She was in Burnt, which was a really good film. She was in Secret Diary of a Call Girl. Oh, I never actually saw that show. But yeah, I mean, she's obviously getting the job done and making a bunch of different movies. But she is so good as Deborah, like as this sort of happy-go-lucky waitress, you know, who's just like, yeah, you know, this is where I am in life. It's like, but this is where I want to be, which is out and just driving around. And so, yeah, she's very good in the story, though.
Yeah, I thought, and you know, she had her one, what I felt was her best line out of all her dialogue, and that was when they get back to the hideout after all the bad stuff happened, and her main thing, she just goes, not a chauffeur, got it.
Yeah, yes.
Duly noted.
All right, so let's get on to the last actor on our list, and that is Kevin Spacey.
Who needs no introduction whatsoever, because if you have not seen a film with Kevin Spacey in it, you are once again uncultured and need to go educate yourself.
Let's just go with the top four that are listed right here.
Okay.
Usual Suspects.
Okay.
American Beauty.
American Beauty.
L.A. Confidential.
Okay.
Seven.
There it is. Okay.
And he's not even a primary part of that movie.
No, but he is the pinnacle of the bridge and the twists of that film. And the just sheer calmness of his character is what makes that entire last, like, 40 minutes so unsettling.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just insane that, such a characteristic that would normally be okay causes such unease throughout the rest of it, and that is just something only an actor as himself can do.
Yes. So I'm just looking at some of his other movies, early TV shows. He started acting in Hollywood in 86.
Okay.
And just basically a bunch of different random TV shows or big or bit parts in film. Then he had a small part in Glengarry Glen Ross. And this is kind of where he started to pick up, because then after that he gets like The Ref.
Oh, that's with Dennis Leary.
Dennis Leary, yep. Which is a very fun movie.
It's a very under the radar film.
Yes,
you
yes.
know, that not a lot of people know about that pair up and whatnot. That's
yes,
it's definitely a good one to watch though.
Then Swimming with Sharks. I think maybe Big Kahuna might have been there. Maybe no, that came later. Yeah, Swimming with Sharks, and then just a little bit later the next year, he is in The Usual Suspects, which is the movie that really launches his career. And then he's in Outbreak, Seven, A Time to Kill, L.A. Confidential, Midnight in the Garden of Good and Evil, The Negotiator.
That is an excellent film. You want to talk about a good pairing. Kevin Spacey and Samuel L. Jackson.
Mm-hmm.
That is probably still to this day one of my top five.
You're talking about Midnight in the Garden of Good and Evil?
No.
Or Time to Kill?
The Negotiator.
Oh, okay, because they were also in A Time to Kill.
Yeah, but as for the pairing between them,
yes, together,
and for that story,
and that was when Samuel L. Jackson's star was really like rising up quickly too. And so let's see, we got American Beauty, Big Kahuna, Pay It Forward.
Pay It Forward, that was a big one for me. That was really good.
K-Pax.
Oh my God!
Yes,
that is a quirky movie, but it is also a serious movie. Mm-hmm. It is also a funny movie.
To see,
because he's paired up with Jeff Bridges in that film. That's also an excellent pairing.
Life of David Gale, Beyond the Sea, Superman Returns, where he plays Lex Luthor. 21, The Applicant, Moon, where he was just the voice, but he was still like so good in that. Let's see. Horrible Bosses and Horrible Bosses 2.
He was hilarious in that. Absolutely loved him as that character.
Then, let's see. Did a bunch of other crap. Oh, Elvis and Nixon. He was in that. He played Nixon. And Baby Driver. And then, of course, he's on the TV show House of Cards.
Right.
But it was just after Baby Driver came out that everything came to a screeching halt.
Yeah, he did not play that press and that whole incident off very well.
So for those of you who don't know, and I don't know how you don't know this, if you keep up with any of the movies and stuff like that, is that Kevin Spacey was accused of sexual assault with a young actor back in the day by the name of Anthony Rapp. Anthony Rapp, who actually has had a pretty good career going throughout his life. First thing I ever saw him in was Adventures in Babysitting, where he plays a great character who's goofy and kind of schmarmy and like just like a weird dude. But he's very good in that. But then, like, you know, he did a bunch of other stuff, Broadway and whatnot, and then gets into the play or the musical Rent, and then does the movie Rent. And then now he is actually on the show Star Trek Discovery, where he plays a scientist, and he's amazing as this character.
Wonderful.
Yeah, he's had Anthony Rapp has had a phenomenal career, as far as I'm concerned. He's had a very good and productive artistic career. And Kevin Spacey went on to win multiple Oscars in pretty much every award under the sun. he almost to the level of EGOT. I don't think he could get a Grammy at this point, but... you know, because EGOT is Emmy, Grammy, Oscar, Tony.
Ah, gotcha.
And so I think he's got an Emmy. I think he's got the Oscar, and I think he's got the Tony. But I don't think to get a Grammy, he'd have to do something musical, like that would be sold, like you know, not just like a musical, but he'd have to be in like some type of song or something and win that one.
I don't see him doing that anytime soon.
No. I don't think so either. But yes, he was accused of that. And then some other people also came forward and accused him of some other stuff. And he kind of botched like his PR and stuff too. Like he kind of came across as like being insincere, It's like, and
because he redirected the press to himself in a sense. I mean, he was already getting the press, but he redirected the news to make it more about him as opposed to what happened to said actor. And that's when he allegedly came out through this announcement as being homosexual. And so therefore he got kicked off House of Cards indefinitely, and
his character was killed.
And to my knowledge, I believe any upcoming projects were also put on hold. Because nobody wanted to be associated with him.
So Gore Vidal was supposed to be released, like, at some point where he plays, or Gore is the name of the movie, and he plays Gore Vidal. Was supposed to have been released already, but they postponed it, and he has nothing in his credits after that as of right now. I'm not saying that he couldn't make a comeback, like, you know, but he definitely...
I think he's got a little bit of damage control to work on first before he makes his comeback.
Yes, and I feel that, you know, he needs to try and, like, maybe redeem himself from these allegations and stuff, because honestly, I mean, like, sometimes I hear stuff and I'm just like, okay, like, I'm going to wait for you know, evidence or something along those lines. And this isn't a commentary on what is currently going on in our political climate. I'm just saying that's like, but when I heard Anthony Rapp talk about, like, what actually happened, I was just like, it's like, good Lord, man. It's like, that's gotta be devastating to be like this young child, you know, and like looking up to this guy and then like having to go through all of this crap. And it's just like, man, that's really got to mess with you. And I really had a lot of empathy for him.
Oh, absolutely. No, that's
like,
it's hard not to.
Yeah.
And it also, obviously, it tarnishes your view of such a good actor.
Yeah.
And that's what I'm saying. You know, damage control needs to be done. You know, proper statement needs to be put out. Like I said, whatever allegations need to be addressed and settled in whatever way possible. And then I feel he can move on as, you know, other actors have done in the business.
Yes,
or people
absolutely.
Have done in life.
Absolutely.
So let's go on to the man behind the camera, the mastermind behind the masterpiece.
Yeah, we had our last actor, but we're going to finish out really freaking big here. This man is a genius as far as I'm concerned. This man is one of the best directors ever. Ever. Okay. We are talking about Edgar Wright. Edgar Wright is the director of at least three of my favorite movies of all time. My top tens have these three movies in them. And those are Hot Fuzz.
Yes.
Scott Pilgrim versus the World.
Mm-hmm.
And Baby Driver.
All right.
Now, he did the, the Cornetto trilogy with Nick Frost and Simon Pegg.
Because he also did Shaun of the Dead.
Yes, which is the thing that really put him on the map.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, then that also kind of revamped and, you know, kind of revived the zombie genre. You know, it just so many things, you know, other projects and movies started popping up after that release, because it was just so well done. It had everything you wanted and loved about zombie movies, with so much comedic relief, excellent acting. And it was like, you know, it just... That moved the zombie genre one degree in the right direction. Mm-hmm. That's where it's been going ever since. And so you got that. And then
Hot Fuzz after that, is one of the best police stories
ever.
One of the best cop comedies of all time. And
also serial killer. Like, that's got some horror-esque stuff.
It's got some horror stuff. It's got great action. And it has just some of the best lines, because it just makes fun of not makes fun of, but it pays homage to
90s action conflicts.
90s action
and
conflicts. 80s. Like when he like dives out and is like firing, it's like, or when he beats up the guy and like shoves him into the freezer or whatever. And he's just like, oh, I just killed the guy over in the freezer.
Did you tell him to cool off?
He's like, did you tell him to cool off?
Oh, shame. But then, you know, kind of like how you were talking about in Baby Driver, you know, that song was playing in the beginning and people are doing stuff as the song's going on. Every question that Frost asked Peg, you know, in the bar, have you ever fired one gun while jumping through the air? Have you ever fired two guns while jumping through the air? Every question he asked in that scene, they do at the end of the movie.
Yes, they do. It pays off. The joke pays off. And he does the exact same thing in Baby Driver. Did you know where he did it?
No, I do not.
He does it with lines. In the very beginning, when he's back with his foster dad, they're watching TV. Every single line that is said on the TV is repeated later on.
Oh, I did not know that.
Yeah.
Interesting.
So yeah, there you go.
He's just a genius in that.
Yes.
So, but he, and then after Hot Fuzz, he did The World's End, which is your sci-fi action flick, is what I would sort of put it under, because you got the alien robot type invasion thing going on and a lot of booze. And, of course, a reprise of actors from previous films that just makes it more hilarious. And, you know, you even got freaking Pierce Brosnan in there.
Yes.
And just another really well-done film. Lots of comedy, lots of action again.
Yes.
And lots of really memorable lines.
So just to get into this, like Edgar Wright used to direct music videos and stuff, which makes a whole lot of sense when you think about it now.
Okay.
But one of the things that he did... So the development for Baby Driver actually started in 1995.
Wow.
He got the idea while living in North London and listening to the song Bell Bottoms by the John Spencer Blues Explosion, which is the first song that they do in the movie. And so it's like the entire thing that he kind of envisioned was a bank robbery and a car chase set to the song, which is the first scene of the film.
Wow.
So he started working on it all the way back then. He actually did a music video for the song Blue Song by Mint Royale, and it had Noel Fielding as a music loving getaway driver for a group of bank robbers. But he took a lot of inspiration from other stuff, including, let's see, Straight Time, Point Blank, Reservoir Dogs, and Heat, which if you look at it, like, that's very clear in his direction for Baby Driver. The entire reason to why the song Easy Like Sunday Morning is in the movie is because he asked Ansel, like, you know, hey, what's a song that you know by heart? And he goes, Easy.
Oh.
By the Commodores. Well, and so that's the entire reason why that song was in there. Let's see here. Jamie Foxx, they said, apparently, I know I'm kind of veering off here. It's like, but Jamie Foxx actually, like, used to spend a lot of time on set, even if he didn't have scenes, just because he wanted to watch all the other actors do their thing. It's like, because he's like, it's like, why wouldn't I pass up this opportunity to see this level of acting?
And I feel, and once again, I feel that, like, you know, just how directors, when they go the extra mile to put extra detail and extra intention to things, I feel that so many actors and actresses have also, you know, kind of gone the same route of, you know, you have the really special ones out there that no matter how little or how much they contribute to the film, they're going to be a part of every detail that they're going to be able to and contribute as much as they are going to be able to make that film that much more special. So that does not surprise me, because Jamie Foxx is phenomenal.
So I'm just learning. It's like, he directed a bunch of TV series as well, in Britain, cause he is a British director.
Right.
So he did Mash and Peas, which I'm assuming is some type of duo comedy show that they did. Asylum. Is It Bill Bailey? Which is a show starring none other than Bill Bailey, of which Bill Bailey is in Hot Fuzz as two different characters who look exactly
like
nobody tells me nothing. And then a bunch of different TV shows. And then this is the one I love, though. He did the series Spaced, which Spaced was hilarious. It stars Nick Frost as the captain of a spaceship in the future, and his crew is just completely insane. Kind of like that, the one show that's on right now, the Orville, but less action-y, like less Star Trek oriented, and more just like, this is a weird sci-fi show.
Okay, kind of like Lex.
Yes, but one of the best things in the very first episode of Spaced is one of the things I love the absolute most, and that is his like weapons officer is a dude who always wants to just kill everything, and they go down to this planet and they're like having dinner with all this stuff, and he's just, and he and this other like military dude are talking, and he goes and the military guy goes, you know, it's like, with your new weapons that you give us, we can crush our enemies like this. It's like, that's what it is. The weapons officer is like, you know, with our new weapons, is like, you'll be able to crush your enemies like this. And he grabs a thing and he squishes it. And they both start laughing. And then the other guy goes, here, squish. He's like, here. And he grabs another piece of fruit and he gives it to him. And he goes, these are really good for squishing. I lost it. Because it was completely unexpected in the delivery of the line. And I was just like, that's so good. It's like, here. These are good for squishing.
You know what would be awesome to see Edgar Wright on?
What?
QI.
Yeah.
If he came on as a guest, I feel he would kill it on there.
Yes.
With the camaraderie between everybody.
Yes.
And I would love to see him and Stephen Fry go back and forth.
Well, Stephen Fry is no longer on the show, actually. He has stepped down as host.
No way.
Yeah. There's one of the women who is constantly on the show. Has taken over duties for it, and she's really good too. But she's not Stephen Fry. Stephen Fry stepped down because he developed cancer, actually. So
that's sad.
And he's fighting it, but he's doing a lot better than he was before. So yeah, but let's get back to Edgar Wright.
Yeah.
Edgar Wright, of course, then goes on to direct Shaun of the Dead, Hot Fuzz, directs a commercial or a trailer in the movie Grindhouse for the trailer. Don't.
Then, which is one of the more messed up ones out of all of them.
Yes. Then comes out and does Scott Pilgrim versus the World, which is one of the best comic book adaptations of all time, and is also one of the best musically oriented, actiony, fight gaming, video game type movies ever. It's probably the only one in that genre. But man, does it nail it. And so, yeah, Scott Pilgrim versus the World is honestly a movie that we need to do anyway, just because it's that good. And I remember when I watched it, I was like, holy cow, this movie's amazing. I need to show my friends. And I believe I specifically called up our mutual friend, Sean, and was like, dude, you have to come see this movie. And so he comes over to my house and we watched it that night. And he's watching it and just busting up laughing the entire time. Loving every second of it. And the best thing about it was that, like, he's, you know, as we both know, he's a total video game nerd. And so every single little video game reference in there, he totally got. And he was just like, that was the noise from such and such. Or he's like, that was a reference to this. He's like, that. And I was like, this is amazing. It's like a weird commentary for video games. It's like, I loved it. So then he directs World's End, does a fantastic job with that, directs Baby Driver, which blows my mind. And then now he is working on something that has been announced, but nobody knows anything about it other than the title, and that is Shadows.
Okay.
Yep, that's all I got. That's all I got. That's his entire resume up until what he's actually working on now. But since he just did – well, he actually did direct a music video called Beck – called Colors by Beck, the musician.
Yeah.
And I actually have seen part of it, and it's actually – it's a crazy video, but yeah, he did that one as well. So Edgar Wright, though, he was born in 1974. He's still young. He still has decades of movie making to do. And he produces usually about a film every couple of years. He took a little bit of a break between World's End and then to Baby Driver. He went from 2013 to 2017.
Kind of follows the same pattern that Quentin Tarantino does.
Yeah, but
Tarantino's about every 2 to 3 years he does a movie.
Yeah, so Edgar Wright, though, he picks the movies he really wants to do. But Baby Driver was his thing, man. It's like he wrote it, he directed it. Like, I think he has a cameo in it at some point, but I don't know where. Because he usually does a cameo in random spots in his movies.
Oh, okay.
So, but yeah, he's just one of these directors that, like, I'm honestly going to see every movie that he makes. It's like if Kevin Smith makes another movie, I'm going to go see it. If Edgar Wright makes another movie, I'm going to go see it.
Agreed.
So, and that's it.
That's
all I got.
Driver.
That's all I got for this one.
So we start.
We got to rank this one too.
I was say you said you wanted to start the show with the ranking, but you never gave it. You got so excited and then
because it should have been fairly obvious. Like, and I've said it even throughout this is in my top 10.
Okay.
This is easily in my top 10.
But
I don't know. I don't know where in my top 10.
But where is your ranking?
My ranking is of my favorite movies. Of movies that I can sit down and watch at any given time, this is one of them.
But on the scale.
On the scale, I've got to give this one a 10.
You got to give it a 10?
There is, I cannot find a flaw in this movie. I cannot find a flaw in this movie. I can't find a flaw in the logic. I can't find a flaw in the delivery. It's like there isn't a flaw in editing or acting or directing. It's like, you name it, like, this was done so supremely well. It was just ridiculous.
I will agree with you. I have to give it a 9, though. It does not get a perfect 10 for me.
Understandable.
Only because of my opinion and knowing after a little tidbit that I read, Emma Stone was supposed to be the love interest, but was replaced by the actress who did Deborah.
Yes.
And I feel that if Emma Stone was in there, that might have given it the perfect 10. But that's just because I like Emma Stone that much more than her.
I'm not sure. I mean, I would have had to have seen it.
It's a different movie, exactly. We're never going to know. But like I said, that's my opinion.
Yeah.
And, I think knowing that and, knowing the dynamic and the skills that she brings to movies,
yes.
I feel that, that would have put it there for me.
Also, the other thing I loved is the fact that the movie was filmed in Atlanta.
Interesting.
I know. It's like it's not a normal place where you expect a movie to be filmed. So, but, yeah, it was all entirely filmed in Atlanta. And just a solid, solid film as far as I'm concerned. It's got an incredible soundtrack. And, it's just a number of songs just back to back to back to back to back. Let's see here. Oh, and apparently I did not know this, but whenever there is, no music playing, there is actually a subtle whine in the background of the entire movie.
Hmm.
Like, whenever music is not playing. And that's just showcased that the character has tinnitus. Let's see here. Over the logos, beginning at the movie's first song, which he actually put together with Stephen Price. And it was actually, here you go, Quentin Tarantino read the script and was the one who told Wright about the song called Deborah by Trex.
Which makes a whole bunch of sense because Tarantino is also very notorious for his soundtracks.
Yes, he's very particular about all of his soundtracks.
In his movies as well. So that's a good person to go to for when you're looking for that particular song to fit a scene very well.
And just to let you know that the soundtrack for Baby Driver, which was released on June 23rd, featured 30 songs.
That's really extensive for a soundtrack. That's extensive,
yes,
for a CD to begin with.
Yes. And in fact, they actually released Baby Driver Volume 2, which was just the score. Which was just like the action-y music and all that kind of stuff.
Was still synced up with the scenes.
Yes, yes. let's see here. Oh, so here's what I loved, right? Box office. Okay, how much did the movie cost?
Cost to make?
Yeah.
$60 million.
$34 million.
I'm surprised with the vehicles that were wrecked and damaged and
True.
Everything like that.
True.
So,
box office gross?
130.
226.9.
Wow.
Yeah.
Good payday.
Good, good payday. And I think that's honestly, that makes me believe that Shadows is going to be another really good film because to me it's like, the studios being like, okay, you did this and you got a massive return. It's like, what can you do with some more money?
Well, but that's the thing. Maybe that's kind of his, notion though. He does not need a lot of money to make a good budget film.
True.
He's trying to show up Hollywood essentially. He's wanting to, go out there and be like, you don't need $80 million of CGI to get a $200 million movie. If you just goes back to that thing.
Yes.
A little bit more detail, a little bit more tenacity to it all, and that's what you get.
Yes. According to Rotten Tomatoes, the movie has a 93% fresh rating based on 325 reviews.
Is that audience?
And it has an
8
out of
critics?
10. So.
Is that audience or critics, though?
I don't know. It just says 93%, so according to this.
I wouldn't doubt if they're both the same.
Yeah. CinemaScore gave it a grade of A-, which those losers.
That's probably where I'm at with
that. But yeah, it's everybody across the board seemed to really, really like this movie. It was nominated for a crap ton of stuff, too, and it won a bunch of stuff.
It better have won a bunch of stuff.
It did not win Best Picture.
No.
But that's still still how it works. I would like to point out, though, the St. Louis Film Critics Association gave it awards for best editing and best soundtrack. So there you go.
And best supporting actor, John Hamm.
Well, best scene, Baby Goes for Coffee. It was a runner-up, but it didn't win that scene. I'm sure they give John Hamm awards every year, even if he's not in a movie. It's like, and best actor from St. Louis goes to John Hamm again. Why not? So, yeah, that was Baby Driver by is created, directed, written by Edgar Wright, starring Ansel Elgort, John Hamm, and Jamie Foxx, and Kevin Spacey, and crap ton of other people. And actually, it's not even a crap ton of other people. There's only like 15 people in the entire movie, actually.
Give or take.
We'll give you this, a little bit of trivia here.
There you go.
There was one set built for the entire movie. What set did they build for the movie?
The diner?
The diner. It's funny, because I was just like, you know, it's like you wouldn't think that they would have to go out and do this. You'd think they could find a diner somewhere. But apparently they're few and far between. So, yeah, that's why they had to build the diner set.
Yeah, that makes sense. You watch enough Food Network shows like I do, you know, unfortunately, diners are getting a little sparse. Hopefully they'll make a comeback, though.
Yes. Either way, folks, thanks for listening. Find us on all of our social media stuff on Facebook, on our group, and you can find us on Twitter, I believe, somewhere. I don't know. I'm not sure yet. I still haven't looked it up. Sorry. And but please interact with us in some way, shape, or form. Also, thanks to David's mom for listening to the show every week. I see your download. Thanks for being our one listener. No, I'm kidding.
Thank you, Mom.
We're getting more. We have more listeners, but it's just funny because I do crack up because every time you share, it's like she likes it and like does that stuff. So, Mom, I miss you. I haven't seen you in a few years now. I need to come and hang out sometime. I'm sorry. I live in St. Louis now, so it's harder for me to get over here.
That damn bridge.
Get her to come on the show one time. It'll be fun. We'll have a blast. but yeah, that's all we got for this show today. I've been your host, Brian Crock. Along with me has been David Kalisa.
Thank you all. Have a good night.
Remember, folks, I was going to use the outro for my other show. Sorry, that was the bad part of me doing it right there. But, you know, screw it. Just remember, grab your popcorn.